As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Chunkies coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond. We are streaming live on the free Odyssey app. You can take us on the go all across the country, and you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network, brought to you by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. Time to talk a little baseball. Join us on the Rude Guest Hotline. It's Mike Rizzo, President GM of the Washington Nationals. He's presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Junkies. How are you?
Doing great.
Well,
doing great. You must be doing okay after a nice dub yesterday.
Yeah, felt good. We needed it, and pitching pitched well, and got some timely hits. And it was a cold night, and it was a good one to win. Yeah,
James Woods, the real deal, Holyfield. I don't know if you know
that.
He's a
good young player, and just getting better and better each game, and. Got a great attitude and good skill set, and has got a chance to be a really good one for us.
Do you remember the first time you saw him? How old was he?
We had seen him in high school playing in Florida in that year's draft, and then we scouted him pretty thoroughly throughout the year that we made the trade for him. So we had seen him play a lot.
Talk about it's kind of ugly with Paul DeJong getting hit in the face by Keller, and they said he went in for scans and they didn't release the results. Is it serious or is he going to be okay?
I'm pretty sure he'll be okay, but I'm almost positive. I haven't seen him obviously today yet, but I'm almost positive it'll be a DL, an IL situation. That ball hit him pretty flush, and it was unfortunate and ugly incident that he took the brunt of the ball to his face pretty thoroughly. So I just assume that the IL will be closed and something, his nose or something will be broken, and so I would anticipate that an injury list will be the next thing in order today for him. So our prayers go out to him. I haven't seen him yet, but we're thinking about him, and it was an ugly incident.
That sucks.
A cold night and a slick ball, and that's the unfortunate part about baseball is things like that happen, and I know the pitcher Keller felt terrible about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, does a situation like that, will Keller just send a message through the PR to Paul? How does that work after the game?
Yeah, I'm sure they'll I'm sure he'll reach out and touch base with them. Different ways of doing it, and I don't know which way he'll do it, but we know what obviously wasn't intentional. It was kind of something that that unfortunately happens in the big leagues, especially in games like that with the cold weather. You know, the ball's slick, and and he's throwing two seamers in to try and get him out. So
yeah,
Mike, you could see Keller's reaction. He clearly didn't mean to do it. He like recoiled when he saw the ball hit Paul in the face.
I would feel horrible.
As a quick follow up, have you encountered guys over the years that have gotten hit like that that are hesitant to go back and face major league pitching, or these guys are tough? They're they're just used to it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that everyone's been hit high and in on by this, but this point in their careers, mm-hmm. and for the most part, they just jump back in, and when their bones are healthy enough to play, they start a rehab assignment and get some swings, get some at bats, and get back at it.
What's going on with the Torpedo bats? Haven't heard anything in the last couple of days. You guys got a bunch of those yet, or what? Are guys still hitting bombs with them? Or is that kind of fading?
I think guys who hit bombs with whatever bat they use. Yes, we have. We've got a project to really investigate. What makes those bats so effective, and if they're effective, and mm-hmm. we have several guys on the team have them and have been using them, and have used them in the past. By the way, this bat didn't just come in the last 3 weeks of the
right.
They've been around, and I think that first week with the Yankees kind of brought it to the forefront and made it a very popular.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you're down CJ, obviously. I'm not sure when he's eligible to come off. And then Paul, like you said, will be on the IL. So you got Nunez playing short, Rosario playing third. And I assume you'll call somebody up, a left side infielder to replace him.
Yeah, we'll call up somebody for today's game. It'll be an infielder, probably Lipscomb. Okay. I think that's the logical guy that could play defense at four different infield positions, and right-handed bat, and swinging it pretty good in AAA. So I think that we've decided he'll be the guy that replaces him.
Gotcha.
And Mike, I'm just curious, because it's such a funny topic to me. Which of the guys on the team do you know off the top of your head are using those Torpedo bats? You said a couple have been using them for a while.
Yeah, a couple have been using. I don't have the actual facts in front of me, so I don't want to throw out a couple of names. But if it's important,
it's not that. It's just funny to me.
I will investigate it and look into it.
No, it's fine.
And tell you next Wednesday.
It's just funny to me. That's all. It's interesting. If it works, it works. Who cares?
What talk about Jake Irvin last night, man. He was, I know he struggled a couple starts before that, giving up four earned runs in each of his last two starts, but he was dominant last night.
Yeah, Jake gives you the opportunity to win, almost each and every time out. And, he's a big, strong, tough guy that's certainly not afraid of the cold weather. That last night's game was probably the nicest game he pitched in his high school career up there in Minnesota. So he knows cold. He knows how to pitch in it. He knows how to prepare for it. And he's just, he's a warrior. It gives you, gives you everything he has every night, and usually goes, six innings per start. And he had it going last night. He had three pitches going and was attacking the zone, threw a lot of strikes. Got ahead of a lot of hitters and was able to put him away with either soft contact or a good play by the defense. So, gave us a real chance to win, and we finished it off with Ferrer and Finnegan and got a nice needed victory. So, a good team win. Nunez got a big hit with men in scoring position, and mm-hmm. Of course Woody hit the bomb the first at bat of the game. So. It was a good team fought win, and we've got to tee it up and do it again tonight.
Talking to Mike Rizzo, Nats GM, president of baseball ops, kind of a big picture thing. Where is Josiah Gray at in his rehab? I think he was down there at spring training and he took fielding practice and started to throw, right?
Yeah, he's well along his way in his return to throw program, and he had Tommy John surgery and sometime in August, so that's a 12 to 16 month recovery time. So you know, we see what the calendar is, and we expect him towards the end of this baseball season.
Hmm. When you look around the rest of baseball and teams that have gotten off to good starts, I mean, obviously the Padres, Giants, Dodgers, so many teams actually gotten off to pretty good starts. Any of them surprise you?
No, those are all good teams that have an abundance of talent, and were expected to be good and have been good. So I think that you know, when you go out and play those teams, you have to bring your A game, and have to play a really good game to beat them. And it was shown by how we played the D-backs and the Dodgers. It's you have to take each pitch at a time and really focus in and for nine straight innings and play good baseball.
So you've got Mitchell Parker going tonight against Brady Falter, Bailey Falter, and Parker's been really good in his first couple starts. So what do you expect from him?
Yeah, Park's been another guy, gives you a good chance to win the game, and was really good for us last year. It came out of nowhere in most people's eyes to have a good rookie season for himself, and first couple of early starts he's been great. Again, he throws strikes with three pitches. He's got the split changeup that he uses as his wipeout pitch, and has command of three pitches and pounds his zones, gives his defense a chance to make plays.
So 6:40 start tonight. Then I love 12:35 first pitches.
That long stay baseball.
I mean, it's the best thing ever. It's heaven on earth, man. 12:35 first pitch, and then you guys jump on a jet and go out to Denver.
Denver, yes.
Yep. You play Colorado this weekend.
It was a tough road trip to pack for. A lot of different climates in this road trip. So there's a lot of clothes in my suitcase.
Iverson? Wasn't Allen Iverson famous for every town he just bought a new outfit?
Well, that's why he's damn near busted. Yeah.
He's burned through his money.
I think
just more suitcases.
Yeah, was the temperature last night?
I think I saw on the scoreboard it was like 45 or something like that.
And it looked kind of windy, too.
That's crispy.
Windy. 45 and windy. And it rained all day. It was a miserable day.
But you got a dub.
What about today? Same deal?
Yeah, just looking out the window, it's kind of cloudy, and it looks chilly out there, and the wind is blowing, yeah.
Okay. All right. All right, let's get a win. Mitchell Parker going to pitch well tonight.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Okay, buddy.
Rizzo.
You didn't ask him about Dylan.
I asked him.
You can't do it
week.
Every week.
Yeah.
Why not? Might as well. I'm going to mention James Wood every week.
That's Mike Rizzo, President, General Manager of the Washington Nationals. Presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information.
And the pitch. Breaking ball pulled on the ground right side. Garcia to a knee has it. He straightens. He throws to first to low on the side, retired. Jake Irvin threw seven innings in Pittsburgh.
Jake Irvin's best start of the young season, one of the best starts turned in by a national, got the boys back in the win column last night. Gave up just three hits and seven shutout, and he joins us now for a little trivia and fun on Grant and Danny on the Fan. First of all, congrats on last night. You shoved.
Healthy.
Thanks, guys. I'm fired up for trivia, man. But last night was great. The boys needed a win, and going to keep it going on this long roadie.
Yeah, it is a very long road trip. This is one of those where you got to put your packing skills to the test, because you start in Miami, it's like 85 degrees. The roof was open for three straight, which I never remember there. Then you go to Pittsburgh, where it's windy and cold, probably felt like home in Minneapolis, in high school ball or something. And then you finish this thing at Coors, where it's been snowing off and on.
Yeah, you hang with them, man. And the D.C. weather's been a little bipolar, too, going from, opening weekend, 70 and sunny, and then down into the 40s and 50s. So we're just taking it as it goes. That's the early part of the season.
Jake Irvin of the Nats is with us on Grant and Danny. All right, so Danny, you know this, but I'll explain to everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
So we had done some fun stuff this offseason, spring training and around opening day, where we grabbed a bunch of the Nats. We asked him some pop culture and trivia stuff. Jake Irvin had stood out as a trivia guy through
and through. A savant, if I can say that?
I would say he's very good at trivia. And so we realized, we're like, you know, we give away prizes on the show all the time. Nats fans like to get to know and talk to the guys. Why don't we have them on to compete against some listeners? So today, you guys, our listeners, are playing for a four-pack of tickets to the DC Defenders Sunday, April 20th at Audi Field against San Antonio. For tickets and the full Defenders schedule, you got to go to thefandc.com/contests. But here's how it's got to work. So Jake will compete against our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
I think the buzzer is going to be they've got to say their,
name. Yeah.
So in other words, if Jake wants to answer, he'll say Jake. If I want to answer, I say Grant. First one in gets to answer the question. But if you're wrong, then you're in big trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Because now I got all the time I need, and I already know that I'm a little closer to the answer. But I got a bunch of categories here. I've got movies. I've got music. I've got geography. I've got U.S. history. We're ready to go. So, Jake, without further ado, how are you feeling? Are you confident? Do you like your chances?
I'm feeling great, man. I got a bunch of useless knowledge packed away in this brain, so excited to put it to use.
Love all right.
It.
This is not the TV show Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
No, it's not.
This is the Grant and Danny program, Are You Smarter Than a National? It's very, very different.
Very different.
Yeah, it's a very different show. All right, let's go to Michael, who's in Germantown, to get started. Michael, say hello to Jake Irvin after the big outing last night.
Congrats, Mr. Irving. Awesome game. Let's go.
Michael, let's rock.
All right. So, Michael, you understand your buzzer is your name, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes,
all right. First question. Who played Rose in the 97 smash hit, The Titanic?
Michael.
Michael's in first.
Go
Emma
ahead.
Watson.
Emma Watson?
That's a no for me, dog.
I mean, not even.
I don't think she was born yet.
I will say it would have been really well, it would have been awkward. That scene where he was painting a French lady.
That'd have been tough.
In that year for Emma Watson. Jake, would you like to compete for a point here?
Yeah, let's do it. Is it Drew Barrymore?
It's definitely not Drew Barrymore. I thought this was
I don't have a clue.
This is Kate.
These are young people, yeah. They're too young.
Kate Winslet.
I'm an old man. I was too old for that.
Oh, there you go.
All right. So, and this is a best of five series, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the NLDS. You got to win three.
You got to win.
Okay. Here we go. Another movie question. We'll stick with the theme here. Name the 94 film in which the main character said he and his love interest got along like peas and carrots.
Michael.
Yes.
The Notebook.
Wow. No, it's not the Notebook.
Movies are things that oftentimes appear in theaters that people.
I mean, I'm going to go ahead, guys, and say that this is Forrest Gump.
There we go.
Attaboy.
There he is.
Jake Irvin, ladies and gentlemen.
That's Jake Irvin.
That's Jake's music.
Here
Game one goes to Jake Irvin at Nats Park. Game two, still at home. I'm going to leave movies for a moment, though, okay? We're going to go to television. Question three. Which Netflix show features the fictional town of Hawkins, Indiana?
Irvin.
Yes.
That would be Stranger Things.
Atta baby.
Boom. Jake Irvin,
uh-oh,
ladies and gentlemen.
Uh-oh.
Just pummeling Michael.
That's a commanding 2-0 lead.
I mean, Michael, what's happening? If you
Killing
lose
me.
One more game, you get
Killing
swept.
Me. Oh.
All right, here's the good news. The series is shifting to your home ballpark.
Now it's in your house.
This is a 2-2-1-1-1 scenario, okay? I guess that's best of seven. So we'll just go to your ballpark.
2-2-1
for two games.
2-2-1.
Here we go.
However it is, I got to win.
Do you like music? Can I offer you music? Is there any category you'd be good at?
Science. Michael? I'm good at science. I'm good at health and fitness. I'm good at sports.
Okay, sports.
Oh, sports.
Okay.
Jake's pretty good at sports, too,
All
I'd
right.
say.
How about this? What planet is known as the Red Planet?
Michael.
Yes, Michael.
Mars.
There we go.
He's on the
He's
board.
On the board. He's on the
All
board.
All he needed to
He's
know,
on the board.
He just had to get home, people.
The gentleman's sweep is still on the table, though, Jake.
Let's go, Michael.
I need to build some confidence. Just build some confidence. Now
All
I'm
right.
ready.
We'll stick with this category.
Uh-oh. Because it is his home. It's at Michael's
at
place.
It's his home
yeah.
court. Which element has the chemical symbol O?
Irvin.
Michael.
Irvin. Jake Irvin's in.
That is oxygen.
I said Michael.
Let's go.
Sorry,
well,
Michael.
Jake said Jake first. It's a race.
No, I
you
said
see.
Mike. I must be delayed. I definitely said it before him because I heard him say his name. Doggone it.
Listen on the radio. You
I
didn't
promise
say
you.
It
I promise you.
Thank you for the call.
I would not screw you, sir.
I mean, he's arguing balls and strikes. That was middle. I mean, he's telling me it was off the plate. Jake, that was middle.
Yeah, don't use the challenge on that one, bro.
I got middle on my side, too.
Yeah, he's tapping his head over here. It's Joey Gallo. You remember the Gallo
yes.
pitch? It's like just at the belt, right?
It caused Gallo to become a pitcher.
All right, you're one for one. You're dominating the listeners early. You're keeping them from going to the D.C. Defenders game. Let's do this thing. Antoine's in Capitol Heights. How are you, Antoine?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
Great, buddy.
Doing great. Say hello to Jake Irvin.
How you doing, Jake? Great game last night.
Thanks, Antoine. Let's do it, man.
Nope. All right. Jake, we're going to start in your home ballpark. You ready for this?
Let's do it.
I'm going to go TV.
All right.
Who played Monica in Friends?
Oh. I've seen this show so much, but I don't know her name.
Alliteration.
Anybody
Jake.
Can make a guess. Jake, go for
it. It is Courtney Cox.
Boom, yes, goes to Dynamite.
It is. Let's go.
Boom goes to Dynamite.
You had a hard time placing it there. It came to you, but you had a hard time with that.
Sarah Michelle Gellar or something like that kept sitting in the back of my brain for no reason.
Same time frame, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Okay. I can see that.
Yep.
1-0 lead. You're staying in your home ballpark. You're looking for the commanding 2-0 edge and putting the pressure
on. Come on,
Antoine. All right.
Gotcha.
Let's go with geography here. What is the capital of Wyoming?
Irvin?
Yes.
Cheyenne?
Cheyenne is
correct. Cheyenne's right, yeah.
2-0 series lead. We're going to the home ballpark now of Antoine in Capitol Heights. Antoine, what category would you prefer?
I guess sports, science, anything of the sorts.
Okay. Sports question. In 2024, who led the NFL in receiving yards?
Antoine.
Yes.
Jamar Chase. That is pretty...
That is correct.
That is correct.
All right. 2-1. Jake, did you know that had you have gotten your name off?
I had that. Anton was all over it, though. Let's go.
Okay.
2-1. 2-1.
Let's give him another sports question. In the 2024 NFL season, who led the NFC in passing yards?
Antoine.
Yes.
It wasn't.
Need an answer. 3 seconds.
3, 2, 1.
Who did it?
You got nothing. Jake, do you want to try to steal?
Can you steal?
Yeah, I really don't have a clue, but I'm going to throw a flyer out there and say Matthew Stafford.
It's a good guess, but no, we're looking for Jared Goff.
The man he was traded for, ironically.
Detroit Lions.
That was easy.
All right, still 2-1, yeah?
Yep, 2-1.
Okay. What is the capital of Germany?
Irvin?
Jake, yes. Irvin.
Is it Berlin?
It is Berlin.
It is Berlin.
Attaboy.
Sorry,
Antoine.
Antoine,
good effort, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you.
See ya. No DC Defenders game for him.
No. I couldn't remember if it was one of those bits where they're like, it's not their best city. You know what I mean? Like some countries do that. It's always a thought. Well, actually, the capital is Frankfurt. People don't know that. But no, it's Berlin. Jake got it.
Vinny and C. Pleasant.
Mute across the mind.
Yeah, there you go.
What's up, Vinny? Yeah. How are you?
What's going on, G&D? Jake, how you feeling, brother? Good shout-out last night, man.
Vinny, I appreciate you, man. I'm hoping you're ready for some trivia here, man. We need some competition.
Hey, let's get it, man. I'm going to try my best.
Let's go.
All right, first question. Who wrote the Harry Potter series?
Jake.
Yes.
J.K. Rowling.
Bam.
That's one.
Bam.
He was all over that one.
Yeah.
He was, Vinny.
Hand was hovering over that buzzer. He had it.
All right. Question number two. What is Jay-Z's real name?
Benson.
Yes.
Sean Carter.
Boom.
There we go.
1-1.
Ones.
Boom.
Stole one on the road.
I got a video game one here, Danny. You'll be steamed
it
up.
Be hit or miss for these guys. We don't know.
What video game franchise features locations Vice City and San Andreas?
Benson.
Vincent's in first.
Grand Theft Auto.
Boom, bam.
Is he up 2-1?
Nice. He's up 2-1.
He's on the verge.
Here we go. Now it's back in Jake's ballpark, though.
DC
Defenders. Oh, no, it's still in Vinny's.
Yeah, Vinny's got, he took the series.
That's right. He's got home field.
Out of Jake. He's got home field the rest of the way. All right, Jake, you got to get in quick here then and hope for the best, I guess.
All right, let's rip it.
All right. What were the first 10 amendments to the Constitution called?
Irvin.
Yes.
That would be the Articles of Confederation.
Oh, no!
No! Very close.
No, Jake!
Very close.
Oh, no!
Vinny, you got it?
No,
what word did you say?
He said 10 commandments.
I thought he said the commanders.
This is the big one. There are 10 of them. Huge deal.
Belichick.
The William of.
We're looking for the Bill of Rights.
Bill of Rights, boys.
We're looking for the Bill of Rights. All right, still game on the line here. So 2-1.
For that DC knowledge. Good gosh.
Vinny is closing in. Jake looking to come back from
the dead
here. Who was the primary author of the Declaration of Independence?
Vinny. Thomas Jefferson?
Say it again.
It's not Thomas Jefferson.
What is this?
Are you asking us or telling us?
Yeah, you gotta. Are you locking in on that?
I'm throwing it out there. Go ahead, Jake. You might have the grand mission.
It is Thomas Jefferson.
A little confidence, Vinny.
Right. A little confidence.
Come on, Vinny.
You are going to the DC Defenders game this weekend. Four-pack of tickets in the good seats. Congratulations. Sunday, April 20th, Audi Field against San Antonio. For tickets and the full Defender schedule, go to thefandc.com/contest. Well done, Vinny.
I love you guys. Thank you, man.
Thank you, buddy.
Great day, Jake.
Vinny, nice job, man.
Well done. All right, let's play one more absolutely nothing.
Not a lot of confidence in Vinny's answer right there. No. His voice went up a lot of octaves.
Oh, Vinny just hung up. He's got Vinny, you got
to
call
Vinny,
back.
Vinny, call back to get your tickets, dude.
You can't hang up, bud. You need your tickets. Gabriel in Silver Spring on the Fan. Do you want to play against Jake Irvin for absolutely nothing?
And this is for nothing.
Yes, I do.
Oh, here we go.
Okay. You will not be getting tickets, but you will potentially be getting a trivia win. All right. First question. What pop star famously had a wardrobe malfunction during the 2004 Super Bowl halftime show?
Irvin?
Yes. Abram.
Janet Jackson?
Good.
That is
correct. 1-0.
There you go.
What movie reboot in 2008 kicked off the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Irvin?
Yes.
Iron Man?
Look at Jake.
Boom.
He is not happy about losing.
No.
He's back.
Gabriel, I feel bad, dude. Jake's on a mission.
Gabriel, you're just, it's not about you, man. You're just the pavement right now. The steamroller.
U.S. history is not for me, man. I'm bummed about it.
All right, next one. Which celebrity broke the internet with a champagne photo shoot for Paper Magazine in 2014?
Jake Irvin.
Yes.
Is that Kim Kardashian?
It was. That's quick work, Gabriel.
Wow, Gabriel. Tough,
dude. Swept right out of there. That is tough.
You could have been that guy who wins on Jeopardy all the time. You were losing that round, too.
He didn't even get a word in. I don't even think we heard his voice. Kurt in Ashburn, what's up?
How are you guys doing?
Good. Say what's up to Jake Irvin.
I want to ask Jake a question.
Yeah.
Who is the most recent winner of the Minnesota High School Hockey Championship?
That would be the Moorhead Spuds?
Yep, Moorhead.
Let's go.
There you go, Kurt, with a random Minnesota high school hockey trivia question.
Okay.
Vic in Gaithersburg, you there?
Yo.
All right, we're playing trivia with Jake Irvin. You see why we chose him. He knows what he's doing.
He's good.
This is a trivia stud here.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
All right, you're playing for nothing. You ready?
This is for nothing.
This is playing to beat Jake Irvin. What do you mean?
That's true.
There you go. I guess it is, yeah.
Who was the original host of The Daily Show before Trevor Noah?
Irvin.
Yeah, Jake.
Jon Stewart.
Boom. 1-0.
Craig Kilborn preceded him as well. Little known fact.
By the way, Jake Irvin, since his little mishap?
Yep.
4-0 in questions.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just taking out.
Just swatting people aside.
Anger. Which dystopian novel features Big Brother and Thought Police?
Irvin.
Yes.
1984.
My God.
Boom.
This is. I feel bad for everybody now.
George Orwell, if you want the author.
Vic, you got
boy.
Angry Jake.
Just say your name next time, no matter what. Just to get a guess at something.
I gave up a homer in the first, and we're battling through six. Let's go.
But dude, this is your two. This is two starts ago.
You did this.
This is your like four runs in the first, and now you just took your stones
and
out.
And now you're pissed.
Waved them around this for six innings. All right, what is the capital of Kentucky?
Irvin, Lexington.
Yeah, no.
I don't think it is Lexington. Is it? I've got something else listed.
I don't know.
It might not be. You said ring in.
Do you know it, Vic?
I do not at all.
I think it's Frankfurt.
I've got it as Frankfurt.
Yeah, I think it's Frankfurt.
Frankfurt.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right, so
I don't
Jake,
even know if I've heard of that city.
No clean sweep.
Oh, tens of people live there.
How many continents are there on Earth?
Vic. Irvin.
Vic is in
Vic's
first.
In.
Seven.
Attaboy.
Here we go, Vic.
On
got an answer in. There
nice.
He is.
We got a fight. We got a fighter's chance here.
Yeah.
Which U.S. president served more than two terms?
Irvin.
Yeah.
Vic. FDR.
Boom.
U.S. history buff. See?
Yeah.
He did it. Jake Irvin, ladies and
Vic,
gentlemen.
Good job, dude. That was good.
So I think he was 5-1 against listeners.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he just... Dikembe Mutombo at the rim, just swapped.
And even within the games, it was like gentleman sweep four times.
Who had more success against you, listeners today or the Pirates hitters last night, Jake?
Listeners today, man. Bill of Rights is going to haunt me for the rest of the day. So I appreciate y'all bringing me on here and letting me buff up on my U.S. history.
Yeah, it's a good time. Yeah. We will circle back in due time.
Old Articles of Confederation Irvin over there.
Go follow Jake on
social. I don't even
know
what the Articles of Confederation are.
At J-Irvy, I-R-V-Y, 18, to follow him on social. Looking forward to seeing you get back on the Hill. Thanks for hanging, man.
Good job, brother.
Guys, appreciate y'all.
Jake Irvin, boys and girls, you're Washington Nationals. That's how we play. Are you smarter than a National? Grant and Danny on the Fan, there is a awesome DC Sports Doc coming out on Netflix. We'll tell you about it next. We're taking you up to 6:10. That's when the Nats play the Pirates. No Dylan Cruz, Paul Skeens matchup today. Skeens, the winner in that head-to-head, and just overall yesterday, the winner in the Nats-Pirates game.
Right.
Six innings of pretty unscathed baseball as he completely dominated and shut Washington down. But I wanted to talk Dylan Cruz here, and we can open up the listener lines for anybody who wants to weigh in on this at 800-636-1067. Cruz is 5 for his first 47 at the plate this season. 47 at-bats, just 5 hits. All 5 of them are singles, by the way. No extra base hits. He only has 2 walks. That goes against 18 strikeouts in his first 13 games. Danny, how concerned are you?
Somewhat. I mean, you'd be lying or naive to say zero. There are reasons for optimism, though. You start looking at how unlucky he's been. That's not just anecdotal. There's numbers that back that up. You start talking about hard hit percentage and some of the expected batting averages that he should have. He's, you know, a couple hundred points below where it should be. And, you know, number of barrels, line drive percentage, those sorts of things don't speak to a player that's hitting one or whatever the heck it is, you know, hitting in the 100s. But there's also the strikeout element. There's also the chase percentage. There's also some things that say he's a little overmatched right now. So it's not a 10 out of 10. It's not an alarm. It's not an, oh my God, this is a bust, or oh my God, what a mistake this was. We're not even close to that level for me. But it's one of those, okay, I'm monitoring this now. I'm curious as to where the adjustments are coming. I believe they will. He's done this at every level. Not this degree of struggle, but risen to the level that he's at, adjusted, and thrived. He does too many winning things for him to be this, in my opinion.
So I am bothered by how often he struck out this year, fourth percentile in Major League Baseball. And you mentioned Chase. He's chasing way too often, 34th percentile. I think there's some mechanical things he's trying to work through right now. I also wish he had a higher hard hit percentage, 18th percentile. You know, sweet spot percentage, just 15th percentile. He's not getting the good part of the wood on the ball. Just hasn't happened. Right? There are issues here, to be clear. But I think this is one of those things where if you are making a big deal about this, you're being a little bit of a worrywart. Number one, it's been 2 weeks in the baseball season. This is a tiny sample. We're talking about 47 at-bats. That's number one. Number two, the strikeouts, which you led with as your biggest kind of concern or one of your biggest issues, and which for me, just if I looked at them as a total, not knowing how we got there, a problem, have really come down. He had 10 strikeouts in his first 15 at-bats to start the season. That's awful.
Yep.
That is, oh my God, you can't be in the big leagues doing that. He had a 5-strikeout game against the Phillies. But if you go from those first 15 at-bats, the opening series against the Phillies, to now, he has 8 strikeouts in 32 at-bats. 1 out of every 4, 25%, which is a much more normal, reasonable strikeout percentage. Now, is it a little higher than you'd like for a guy that's not hitting for a lot of power and has been just a contact guy to this point this season? Sure. But 25% is not, nobody would be batting an eye if he had a 25% strikeout rate for the season. So I think the first three games, the Phillies, the 10 Ks and the 15 at-bats or four games, whatever it was when he was at that point, that's still what has the strikeout thing out of whack. The ball's been in play way more often since then. The other thing I would say about Dylan Cruz is he has been unlucky statistically going into play yesterday. The seventh most unlucky player in the sport in terms of expected slug versus actual slug. He should actually be hitting 209 right now based on the expected numbers. He's hitting 106, 100 points lower. He should actually be slugging 334 right now. He's actually slugging
106.
Way, way, way below that, same as his batting average because it's only singles, 106. So it's indicative of he's hit into some bad luck. He's also, and people don't like hearing this because, again, they're just looking at the result and everything's an excuse. He's getting pitched to. Like, I would say more than anybody else in the lineup this year, the nastiest, oh, man, you got pitched to there, bro, moments have been against him. He's down 0-2 and a ton of at-bats where, you know, a lot of guys, you go up there, James Wood, they're afraid of you. They're throwing off the plate. They're missing. It's 2-0. It's 2-1. Dylan Cruz, because nobody's fearing him right now, he's down 0-2, makes it harder. I think the Nats have to help him, though. And they are setting him up to fail right now by hitting him eighth in the batting order. They have to move him up in the order to get him some pitches to hit. They have to hit him in front of one of their better hitters, James Wood, or someone who's more selective and harder to get out, like a Nathaniel Lowe. I think to expect him to get going while he's hitting in front of Nassim Nunez or Jacob Young or batting ninth in the order is ridiculous. I don't understand how that's supposed to help him. And frankly, I'm surprised Davey keeps sending him up there Maverick style, but in a plane that's not going to help him accomplish the mission.
Yeah, it is. It's compounded. It's more difficult. I'm with you. I mean, he is 0-2 pretty much every AB. I observed that to Toby the other night when we were at the game and I was doing the post game show. It was every at bat. It seems like that's how it starts. Whether he takes a strike, something nasty, or fouls one off. Next thing you know, he's in battle mode. Now he battles well and he's fouled some pitches off, spits on some close ones. But when you're 0-2, bad stuff happens to everybody except for Tony Gwynn. Tony Gwynn was like a 330 hitter, 0-2. Everyone else, you know, is subject to the whims of the pitchers, especially now that stuff is this nasty. So there are some encouraging signs. Again, I'm with you. Nobody wants to hear them, and no one wants to look at the silver lining. It's not as if he had his expected batting average and slug, it would be great, but it wouldn't be this disastrous.
I mean, if he was hitting .210 with a slug well over .300,
nobody would notice.
I don't think we'd be doing this segment.
Of course not.
He would just be a guy that's off to a little bit of
a slow start.
Disappointing or quiet start. It wouldn't be alarming with a high strikeout rate and one of the worst batting averages and success rates so far in baseball.
Yeah, and he's, you know, the demeanor, the even keel, the fact that he's grinding. I mean, some of this is just bad timing, which means he came out of Florida and was in knots for the first couple of series. That happens. That happens to guys all the time. It just happened in this really small initial sample. If it happened in June or July, you'd go, hey, he's not hitting well lately. He's in a slump. That's normal. When the slump is the only sample we've got that he's now climbing out of slowly but surely, doesn't mean in order to get to, we talk about this all the time with baseball, in order to get to a 300 batting average, you don't hit zero and then 500 to even it out over, you know, whatever, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks. You're hitting better when you start 0 for 19 and now he's 5 for 20 since then. That's not great, but it's also not world ending, right? The bats are there. I think he's going to come out of it eventually. I don't think, we talked about this before the season, and kind of as we got going here, the expectations for him were always maybe a little bit out of whack, a little bit too high, given his popularity and what people were expecting from him.
So I want to go back to that in a second.
In terms of that.
But to hit on something you just mentioned, which was the start of the season, answer this for me. Why was he hitting in the top third of the lineup for the entire spring? Every day at spring training, he was in the top four, top five, generally leadoff, second, third, whatever it was, right? Throughout. You get a month of these fake games, these preseason exhibition spring training games. I don't ever remember him hitting eighth or ninth. And then we show up on opening day. You remember this. Toby and I was sitting there next to you, and we're like, Dylan, the lineup just came out. Dylan Cruz, I think he hit ninth or eighth. I guess Young would have been ninth, so I think he was eighth on opening day. What is that? I don't understand that. By the way, Davey did the same thing with Victor Robles, if you remember.
Yeah.
Which is not a big deal, but it is. I'd like to ask, and maybe I'll have to get over there on the next homestand and ask him this question. What is the point of that? Robles for an entire spring hit near the top of the order and had some decent results. And then on opening day is in the bottom of the order. It's like you've completely changed it. Even the days where you do your dress rehearsal games where you tell the media, like, yeah, this is what it's going to look like for the season. And they assume this is what the lineup is. He's hitting second or whatever. And then Robles was at the bottom of the order hitting ninth. And he's doing the exact same thing now with Dylan Cruz. If it sounds like I'm making a huge deal about it, that's not my intention. But what I am saying is why? What is the point of that? And do you not think that that has any mental effect on the player? It certainly does. Has anybody watched the Netflix series about the Boston Red Sox yet? Have you watched this
yet? I haven't yet, no.
Danny, please watch this. It is so good. If you like Drive to Survive in F1, imagine that, but for a sport you really care about.
But for baseball?
It's awesome, right? But one of the things that has become crystallized in this series for me, with young players especially for Boston, is how much they overthink everything. How much they look into any move in the lineup or perceived slight or anything that happens, how they get down on themselves and they're cursing themselves out and they're telling themselves they're useless and, you know, they don't belong and all this stuff. Now, it just so happens, I think, Dylan Cruz, who's got confidence, number two pick, College World Series champion, winning player. I don't think he's that type of guy necessarily. But when all of a sudden on opening day, for the first time I'm batting at the bottom of the order, when you told me all spring I was going to be this other thing, I don't think that helps me. I don't know if it hurts him, but it certainly doesn't benefit
right, it's not
me.
A benefit.
What is the point of that? And there is a little bit of a trend where he's done it now with multiple guys. But I am a believer in when you call a guy up from the minors, if you're calling him up and hitting him in the worst spot in the order to get pitches, you're doing them a disservice. When right now, to me, getting Dylan Cruz going should be one of their biggest priorities.
And it doesn't seem to be. And
it's not. Alex Cole having a two-hit game is a bigger deal to them.
Well, there's a philosophical thing where sometimes I remember this, you know, again, it's not the same, but where my coach who's now at Wake Forest didn't want to hit freshmen right away at the top of the order. Right? He was like, you need to get used to the speed of college baseball. You need to do this and kind of get used to everything. And eventually you can work your way up. That seems to be the philosophy. I understood that for kids, for guys that are 17, 18 years old. I totally get that, where you went from being the big fish to a totally different level. This guy's got enough pedigree, and he's important enough to your organization where, I'm sorry, I will sacrifice Alex Call ABs, even if he's so hot. I will sacrifice Ahmad Rosario swings or whoever to get my very important long-term face of the franchise piece going, and they don't seem to prioritize it that way. They're one of those, we need you to kind of work your way up. It's almost like being in the semi-minor leagues in terms of the lineup and how important it is. It's a philosophy, not one that I subscribe to, though.
The last piece of the puzzle is what you referenced and I said I wanted to come back to, which is something that I had jotted down to make sure we brought up, which is for anyone who listened to this show, this is something we talked a lot about leading up to opening day. I thought the conversation on Dylan Cruz offensively was completely flawed. I thought that leading up to the first game of the season, because he was one of the favorites for Rookie of the Year, because he's talked about as a number two overall pick, as one of the best young players in baseball, that is taken, I think, synonymously with, oh, well, he's just going to go hit 25 home runs, or, oh, well, he's going to hit 300. That's not what he is right now. And I think anyone who's been following this kind of knew that. He was a career 275 hitter in 135 minor league games. 275 in the minors. You don't get better normally right away early in the big leagues, right? If you look at AA and AAA, he was lower than that. He was hitting, you know, around 250, 260. At Harrisburg, he was hitting 270 in AA. Then he was hitting 260 at AAA when he got called up. And then last year hit barely over 200 in the big leagues and failed to recognize spin as often as you'd like. Like, there's some work that needs to be done here. The point is, he's a terrific defensive player, which he's already shown. He's an amazing base runner. He stole a run in a game going second to home on a play in the infield. He's already shown. He's going to do all those little things at an exceptional level for a young guy, and he's done some of that. But the hitting is going to have to come, and he's either going to make the adjustments with spin, or he's going to be a 240, 250 type hitter who gives you 20 home runs and, you know, 35 stolen bases. And my point has always been, when he's playing in center, that's a really damn good baseball player. There's an immense value there, and it makes sense to take him too. If you're playing him in a corner, the value isn't quite the same. You know, you're not a plus number two pick, or you're not a plus-plus player at, you know, 18, 20 home runs and 35 steals and a 247 average or whatever in right field necessarily, which is why I think because he's an above-average center fielder, you know, for him to end up really being a star, it's going to be easier to do that in center than right. Eventually, do I think he can hit you 280 plus in the big leagues? I do. I think he can make those type of adjustments. He's got that type of bat speed and, you know, the exit velocities and all the things that I look for without the eyeballs of a Mike Rizzo to say that he could do that. He barreled velocity against college at a great rate, more than most guys do at LSU, facing those guys in the SEC. But I just think the conversation was flawed. And the difference between him being in a place where he can get to around 250, which is where I thought he'd be this year, ideally, 245, 250, whatever, you know, and starting off at a place where you're in eyesight of that, is a couple hits so far that he doesn't have when he's been robbed a few times. So it's being overstated, but is it, you know, is it a 0 out of 10 concern? No, because you just can't give him forever to get going.
Right.
But I would bet on him. I just wish they would help him a little bit more, which it doesn't seem like there's any urgency.
Yeah, I'm in lockstep. I know that's boring, but I tend to agree with you. I mean, to me, he's too much of a winning player to be like this. Does that make sense? Like, there are too many good attributes, too much workmanlike, too much grind, too much smart, savvy, discipline. I mean, you go to the ballpark, and you might see him go for four, but one of those will be a ground out to the right side to move a runner from second to third.
Yeah, it's
one
good
of
baseball.
Them, yeah, one of them is a great jump on a play in the outfield that doesn't get mentioned, or a throw to the throw behind a runner to nab him or keep someone close. He just plays winning baseball, and eventually it's going to work for him, but it might take – there might be more speed bumps maybe than people think.
Chris in Hyattsville, what's up?
What's up? So I am a little bit concerned, but mostly because I had one major concern with him coming out of college, and that I think he's a bit undersized. I mean, he's listed 6'2", 203. I think 6 feet is generous. He's playing like 5'11". And, you know, when you don't have the extra beef, some of those wall scrapers that could have turned into home runs show up in your stat sheet and your OPS, and maybe guys, balls that are getting caught by the center fielder would have been doubles off the wall. I mean, he's not skinny or anything like that, but he's not a huge guy who can rely on his size and power to make up for maybe some of the struggles he's having with contact or identifying pitches right now.
I mean, do you know what the average height of the Hall of Fame hitter is?
Well, what was the average pitch velocity, Grant, of every Hall of Famer? It's a different game these days.
To some extent, I agree. I mean, the answer is 5'11", by the way, his height. It's harder to hit when your arms are longer. You swing and miss more. Guys like Aaron Judge and James Wood are unique and rare, and they're exceptions to the rule. It's easier to hit. You look at a guy like a Jose Altuve as an example, who's quick to the ball, or the reason Luis Arraez,
yeah,
you know, hits 320 every year, and being 5'11 and 6 foot has massive advantages when you're quick to the ball, have the exit velocities, the wrist strength, and the things he has. I've never worried about his size. That hasn't really ever crossed my mind. Especially, I mean, he's built really well. He's a thick guy. Would you rather him look like James Wood? Sure, if he has James Wood's skill set, there are three of those guys on the planet right now.
But I think to Chris's point, the one thing I will say is there are a lot of those, God, he just missed that type fly balls, which if you're a little bit stronger, a little bit bigger, a little bit whatever, maybe those are wall scrapers. Maybe those carry out when the weather's warmer. I mean, that's the thing, and maybe that's the point there. But I mean, to me, this is about squaring up the baseball. The thing that I always kind of would advocate for Luis Garcia for all those years was, I understand there's a lot of stuff that ain't good, but that barrel can get to that baseball at a better clip than most guys. And I'm willing to give a lot of leeway there. And that's not what's happening right now for the most part with Cruz.
And just top of my head, thinking of like all-time home run guys, it's a little different because of the era they played in.
Sure.
Like Sosa, Ramirez, those guys weren't 6 foot. Now, we could talk PEDs or whatever, but my point is they had no problem hitting the ball in the air hard with authority.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're 5'7", 5'8", I worry about your size. When you're about 6 foot and you're 200-plus pounds, and you're well put together.
Those legs are trunks too, by the way.
Yeah, hadn't really been something that's crossed my mind. One of the reasons the Nats won last night was James Wood did it again.
Yes, he did.
Home run number 6 already for him on the season, tied for the National League lead. James Wood, who finished 1-for-5 in the game with a solo homer, hit a ball 445 feet that bounced around and then left PNC Park. Is OPS for the season sitting at 950. He's only 22 years old. We got one of them once.
3-2 pitch. What a long drive. Straightaway center and deep. Forget about it. This one heading out toward the river. It is long, long gone. It bounces out of PNC Park and down toward the Allegheny River. James Wood's first career leadoff home run.
Call me Buddy the Elf. I'm in love. I'm in love. And I don't care who knows it. I am a James Wood guy.
Yard work, man.
This is what a man crush looks like. He spits on pitches. He has good at bats. He goes the opposite way. And when he pulls a ball, it gets hit.
It gets hit.
That ball grew lips and screamed all the way 450 feet out of PNC Park.
It wasn't one of those nice summer days, too, with the jet stream going or any kind of humidity. Just freezing cold where balls go to die out there towards center field. Didn't matter to him. Back the fence up 25, 30 feet. Still going out. Well, I mean, unbelievable how good he is.
We got something here. I'm telling you, this guy, this is going to be DC's Judge. You know, nobody's really Aaron Judge. Nobody's really Soto. But this is your MVP candidate for years to come. The only thing that bothers me, because I've thoroughly enjoyed watching him, is that my happiest moments, right after watching him hit a 450-foot bolt and posting about it online or posting the video or whatever, the number of fun-sucking, toxic Nats fans who like to say, he's going to leave in a couple of years, or, well, he'll be a Yankee one day. Go have whatever that is, pity party, in the corner by yourself. Stop yucking my yum, man. I'm going to enjoy James Wood while I got James Wood. And look, I get it. The Learners brought this on themselves. They've never paid anybody. They've never kept any of their stars. So this is what you get. A disenfranchised, angry, cynical fan base. Can you leave me alone while I'm watching my superstar hit some home runs, please? I just want to have some fun watching the kid round the base paths.
Yeah, don't go on any dates because you might break up one day. I don't know. It's fun now. That's all I know. I'm going to have fun as long as I'm allowed to have fun. When the lights go off, I'll leave. I'll go home or I'll go somewhere else, right? I think
you don't have to go home, but you got to get up out of here.
Got to leave this place. But he's special, and that's the part that I care about.
Finally, last night, really, really good pitching, too. Jake Irvin, I mentioned, he'll be on the show at 2:30. He wants to compete in trivia against listeners. He's a trivia guy. We did some trivia early in the year at spring training with a bunch of the Nats. He really had fun with it. So he said, I'm happy to come on and do more trivia.
It just so happened he shoved yesterday, and now he's doing trivia.
Seven scoreless, three hits, one walk, and six strikeouts. Probably the best start, maybe outside of Mackenzie Gore on opening day. Turned in by a National so far this season, lowered his ERA into the threes. He always gives you a chance. But because he went seven, then you go to your A bullpen. Jose Ferrer in the eighth, couple of strikeouts, very good. Finnegan in the ninth, couple of strikeouts, perfect inning. It looks a lot different when you get to use just your two best relievers, doesn't
it? Yeah, with that, there's a little bit less Ribalta, Poche, Sims in there. All of a sudden, you get a goose egg on the board. It looks nice.
All right. Andrew Golden covers the Nats for the Washington Post. The Nats beat the Pirates last night 3-0. James Wood with a leadoff home run to open up the game last night. Jake Irvin outstanding last night. Seven innings complete, three hits, no earned runs, no runs period, six strikeouts and just one walk. The Nats are 7-10, a competitive start to their season. Andrew Golden joins us right now at Andrew C. Golden on X on Twitter. So 17 games into it, and it does start to fly by. It's amazing because it seems like it was opening day just yesterday. But I would say, and I'm curious as to whether or not you would agree with me, but this has been a much more competitive team to start the season than maybe some of the experts thought it would be. You say what?
Yeah, I think I expect the Nationals to be a little bit more competitive this year. I think that they have the talent, too. It's just a matter of can they string it together. And I think what you saw in the Diamondback series and the Dodgers series is that they can't compete, and they do have the talent to keep themselves in the mix, but they do have to do that consistently. As you can see, you know, this weekend in Miami, they lost 2 out of 3 to a team that they beat 11 times out of 13 last year. And so I think it's a matter of just getting that consistency going. But I think they have the talent to compete. It's just a question of how do they stack up in a division that is, you know, pretty stacked with the Phillies, the Mets, and the Braves, who I know have gotten off to a hot start, but, you know, the Braves have a lot of talent as well. So I'm interested to see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, I mean, so far, part of the story, right, Andrew, is that what we lacked last year, what the Nats lacked last year in offensive power, it's a much better situation so far this year.
Yeah, with James Wood, as you mentioned, is kind of spearheading it with his six home runs. But you had Nathaniel Lowe in the order, who was a World Series champion 2 years ago. They added Josh Bell to hit a little bit more power, and then C.J. Abrams. Obviously, C.J. Abrams is a talented guy at the top of the order who has shown he can hit for some power in the past too. And so I think that has been a positive, is that they did say this offseason they wanted to hit more power, and I think that they're seeing that right now. And I think that's obviously what they were hoping for.
Six home runs in 17 games is a pretty good pace for James Wood. What's been the difference for him so far? Because I think his over-under was like 25.5, something like that for the season. He's ahead of that pace. What do you attribute that to?
I think it's just experience in the off-season of preparation. I think obviously he debuted last year right in late June, early July, and I think he had 4 months to kind of get a sense of how big the pitchers are going to pitch him, and I think that obviously was a big adjustment. I mean, last year, at the All-Star break, he led the team in homers and RBIs and walks, and so I think you already saw flashes of what he could be last year. I just think he's more comfortable and knows exactly how teams are going to attack him. I think he just has a better sense of it from being up there for 4 months. So I don't necessarily look at him and see that anything has changed or anything is different. I think it's just more experience and just growing his baseball IQ and understanding of how teams are going to approach him.
So how many home runs do you think he hits after this start?
Well, that's the thing. Like, when the season began, I had him at 27, but I mean, he's already at 6. So I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I need to like up my prediction. Maybe he will get to 30. But one of the things that James always said is that for him, like, home runs come in bunches. And so, I'm gonna stick with my 27. But everybody always gets off the hot starts, but can they sustain it? I'm going to stick with my 27, but I can easily see him hitting 30. And he's as you said, he's on pace to do way more than 30. So we'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, he's got 6 so far for those not paying attention, tied with a bunch of players for second in the league so far in home runs. Who else offensively has kind of carried them and been, either as expected or a surprise so far?
I think, like I mentioned earlier, C.J. Abrams, I know he's on the injured list with a flexor strain. But C.J. has played as advertised so far this year, and I think that he's been pretty impressive. And then a guy who I think has kind of turned some heads is Alex Call. The Nationals ended the year with, James Wood in left field, Jacob Young in center, and Dylan Cruz in right. And that was going to be the game plan, and Alex Call is going to be the backup fourth outfielder, but Jacob Young and Dylan Cruz have both kind of struggled early on. And Alex Call has come out and hit the ball really well. He's been hitting the leadoff spot in games where he's played for the most part this year, especially with C.J. Abrams out. And so I've been really impressed with what Alex has done. He showed some of these flashes last year, but then he got hurt and then didn't come back the rest of the year. But he's shown that he can be a good fourth outfielder and also be a valuable starter when he needs to be. So I've been impressed with what I've seen from Alex.
Dylan Cruz, horrendous start, had a rough, couple of games too here recently, but overall, what are they saying about his slow start to a much anticipated season?
Yeah, my sense is that, they're not panicked, but, and they like what he's been doing recently. I think the problem, at least, in the first couple series, that Dylan wasn't making a lot of contact, and that was obviously alarming. He was striking out a lot, it was definitely concerning. I think now he's making better contact. He's just hitting balls right to people. And I think, last night was probably one of his better games. He's hitting a lot of line drives in center right field gap. And that's what the Nationals wanted to see out of him. And so I don't think that they're overly concerned. But he's definitely off to a slow start and definitely is not what the Nationals envisioned. And, Dave Martinez keeps saying, over the 162-game season, you're going to go through slumps. And so, he could get hot next month and everything will be fine, but I think we still need to see that. And so, I think pitchers are pitching him, fastballs in, breaking balls away, trying to get him to chase, and it's worked at times. And I think he's just trying to figure out how to make those adjustments. So he's hitting the ball well. The other thing, too, that I've heard is that they want him to maybe move a little bit less. Like, his swing has a lot of moving parts, and, that can make it hard to adjust to big league pitching. And so, I think they're trying to get him to simplify his swing a bit more so that way he can have more success.
Seems like Davey's, fooling around a little bit with the batting order. What do you make of that? James Wood in the leadoff spot last night. Cruz, towards the bottom of the order, and I think during much of the spring, maybe he hit in spots higher up in the order. Just give me a minute on, what you think Davey's fooling around here with the order.
Yeah, I think he's fooling around with it right now because C.J. Abrams is out, right? And I think that, you know, I think C.J., you know, he's always the leadoff hitter, right? And James will be right after him. But I think, you know, you want somebody at the top of the lineup who is patient, works counts, and takes pitches. And I think that's what, you know, that's the reason for having James Wood at the top of the lineup. And Alex Call has been there because he's done the same thing. I think Dylan Creasy at the bottom of the lineup is just a reflection of the fact that, like, if you want to win, you want your best guys up top. And, you know, Dylan has not, you know, hit as well at the beginning of the year. You know, it's possible that could change the season progresses. And I know in the spring he batted towards the top of the lineup, but I think it's one of those things where you have to earn it. And you know, like he hasn't hit that well to start the year. And I think it's an opportunity to take some pressure off of him. And hopefully, if things get going, maybe he'll move back to the top of the order. But I think it's just a reflection of how he's hitting right now.
Talking to Andrew Golden from the Washington Post, the Nats last night shut out the Pirates on the road 3-0. Jake Irvin was outstanding. 17 games in, Mackenzie Gore's had a couple of outstanding starts. Give me a minute on the starting rotation before we delve into the bullpen issues.
Yeah, I think the starting rotation has been good. I think Mackenzie on that opening day struck out 13, and you know,
yeah.
I went up there, just his stats matched up to, I think it was Bob Gibson. Like he and Bob Gibson, you know,
pretty good company.
But when you're in the same mix as Bob Gibson, like you'll take that any day. And so I think McKenzie's been good. I think for him early on, I think the key has been that he's gotten to a lot of two strike counts but hasn't been able to put hitters away. When he does, you see what he did against the Phillies, and when he doesn't, you kind of see some of the more recent outings that he's had. But McKenzie's been fine at the top of the rotation, and I think that they've gotten some good starts from Mitchell Parker. Jake Irvin had a really good outing last night. I think the other thing, too, is Michael Soroka is the guy they signed to a contract this offseason. It was 1 year, $9 million. That was the most they still in the free agent. And his first start, he went out with a bicep strain, and he's working his way back. So they've had Brad Lourdes try to fill in this spot. I think this rotation maybe hasn't reached the full potential of what it can be, but I think they've shown some success so far. Obviously, angered by Mackenzie Gore. And I think they just have to keep performing well. And, you know, I think part of the thing, too, is the starting rotation has kept them in games. But as you mentioned, it's the bullpen that's kind of put them in trouble. Like, I think the starting rotation has given the Nationals everything you can ask for. But it really is hard when your bullpen is, you know, giving up runs in the late innings. And it makes it difficult for your team to come back.
All right. I think everybody expected this to be an issue, given that they didn't spend a ton of money on their bullpen. Right. So what are the prospects of this thing moving forward? Is this going to be the Achilles heel all year long if they get decent starting pitching, if they get more offense and more power than they got last year? Is this going to be the thing we look back on and say they didn't do enough to bolster that bullpen?
Yeah, I think it could be. I think when you look at – I think there's a couple things. The first thing is that, you know, last year Dave Martinez, you know, really relied on Derek Law. And I want to say he made a handful of appearances last year. I can't remember the exact number, but this year he entered camp and was a little bit slow, and they were like, he's not going to pitch that much, and just so he's ready to pitch during the season. And now he's on the injured list and things are going slower than expected. So that was a guy that David Martinez could rely on in the middle innings to bridge the gap to the back end of the bullpen. And now he's not here. And so David's trying to figure out on the fly who can he trust in those situations. And just the guys that they put in just have not, you know, lived up to that hype. I mean, they signed Lucas Sims to a deal this offseason. He hasn't pitched that well, and he's walking a lot of guys, which is a big problem to begin with. And it always has been for his whole career. Jorge Lopez has been kind of inconsistent. Even Jose Ferrer, who's supposed to kind of be their setup man for Kyle Finnegan and also close some games, has even struggled himself. And so, it's a mixture of, you know, guys on one-year deals who have had some struggles in the past couple seasons and that they signed and you hope for bounce backs, but also like when guys struggle, like there's a reason they struggle. Right. And so it's like you can't always guarantee that they'll bounce back. And so I think that's kind of what you're seeing right now. They also have also the handful of young guys who are also trying to figure it out. So it's just been a bad combination so far, but you know, they pitched well last night, but those are their best two relievers. So that's what you expect, but we'll see if that continues once they have to trust some of their other guys later in games.
You tweeted out that Davey Martinez had a meeting with his relievers yesterday before the game. What was that about?
I think it was just to sit them down, and Davey said he wanted the message to be positive and just reinforce that, you know, they have a lot of games left and not to panic over 16 games, and that was the message. And so he didn't go into the specifics of everything that was said, but he said that every reliever spoke, and the goal is to get them to all relax and calm down and not stress out about the start, because obviously they had the worst ERA in baseball heading into yesterday's game, and so that's the last thing you want to see, and I'm sure that took a toll on the whole bullpen.
Andrew, is there a bigger surprise in the National League right now than the bad start by the Braves?
That's up there. Yeah, I mean, that's up there. I mean, they had a pretty tough schedule to begin the year, but definitely yeah, that he couldn't right. even shake out a win or two against the Dodgers or the I think they started the season with the Padres, and so I definitely think that's a shock, and they have a. They have an uphill climb being in that division. Like it is difficult to win that division. So that's definitely been the biggest shock for me. Obviously, they get Spencer Strider back tonight, but they have an uphill battle for sure, especially in the NL East. So that definitely has been the biggest surprise for me.
Maybe update, if you have it handy, everybody on Juan Soto's start in New York.
Repeat that again?
Juan Soto, what's his start been like in New York?
I think he's taking like 250 to start the year. He's been okay. I think there's some controversy, I want to say a couple of days ago, because he kind of was mentioning that pitchers have been pitching him differently with the Mets than they have with the Yankees, and that's obviously because Aaron Judge was hitting behind him, and yeah, everybody gets pitched better when Aaron Judge is behind them. And so I think it's been a little bit of a tough start for him, but I think he's been fine because he hasn't been like the Juan Soto that you pay $765 million for. But I guess it's kind of hard to live with those expectations. I mean, you got to be an all-world player every year. So he's definitely gotten off to a cold start. I know that that drew some controversy, but I'm sure he'll be okay.
Two more in Pittsburgh for the Nats, including tonight with Mitchell Parker, who's actually pitched very well so far. Thanks, Andrew, for doing this. Always appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Andrew Golden, everybody, from the Washington Post. Nats are 7-10. Overall, through this early portion of the schedule in the season, the National League East is kind of bunched up with the Mets a game ahead of the Phillies and 2.5 ahead of the Marlins, and Nats are 4 back, and it's the Braves who have started so poorly. Now they lost their first 7 games of the year. They were 0-7 when they started against San Diego and the Dodgers, but really the most impressive baseball so far for Washington was that series at home against the Dodgers, where they won 2 games, generated a ton of offense, and actually had a chance for the sweep when James Wood came up with 2 on in the bottom of the 9th in a game that they lost 6-5. But Wood right now is basically on pace for like 60-plus home runs. He is bashing it, and the opposite field home run last night to lead off the game was sensational. 6 homers in 17 games for James Wood. All right, we'll get back to some football next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
All right, time for us to get back to business. Got to talk a little Nats baseball, helping us do it. Best dude on the beat, our friend Mr. Mark Zuckerman. Zuck, what's up, man? How are you?
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
It's going well, man. The Nats started kind of rough, then got hot, won 2 series at home against 2 really good teams. Struggled a bit in Miami, but I want to start by talking about James Wood. What he's doing right now, how impressed have you been for a guy that's been in baseball your whole life?
I mean, I'm impressed. It's hard not to be, but at the same time, I do kind of feel like this is who he was supposed to be. And it's all coming together, of course, but we saw signs of it last year, and it's fun to watch a kid who has those kind of lofty expectations realize the potential. And now I think people even beyond the Nationals are starting to recognize, well, hang on a second, there's something special going on here with this guy. The home run he hit in Miami the other night, opposite field on just a line.
That's an apple taco, right?
Yeah, yeah. And to a part of that park that like nobody hits it out of right-handed or left-handed. I don't know if you guys heard the clip from the Miami announcers. They were like in stunned silence. They couldn't even fathom it because they hadn't seen a left-handed hitter do that there before. I mean, that's what this guy is capable of doing. And you starting to recognize that maybe the rest of the league is figuring this out, that they've got a special young player here in D.C.
What kind of player are we talking? Like, what does this conversation become? Because we've seen legit stars here, Harper, Soto, and then lesser Turner, Rendon, Zim. You know, I mean, we've seen MVP-type players. I don't want to get over my skis. I don't want to have recency bias. But, like, is Wood on that kind of trajectory? Like, the potential MVP-type dude? Or just a really good player? Or maybe we don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if we know that quite yet. I mean, he certainly has some of the skills that you'd look for in a player of that kind of caliber. What I think is fascinating is that, as you're just asking me that question, I'm trying to think, like, who's he really compared to? I don't think he does compare to any one individual player. I think he's kind of a unicorn. It's because of his physicality, his size. You're 6'7", but run as well as he does and hit the ball as hard as he does. You know, he's kind of like Aaron Judge in terms of the size of the body, but he's a better runner. He is a little bit more of a complete game, I think, than Judge has. He hits the ball the way Soto does as far as that left-handed opposite field power. So it's almost like this amalgamation of several different star players, and he's got little bits of each of them. And, you know, he may be that unicorn because he's 6'7" with speed and tremendous power. And, you know, there's still a long way for him to go to fully establish himself. But you can see the qualities that are there, and it really is, in some ways, it may truly be unique what he brings to the table.
Is his defense upper level as well?
No, not yet, and that's probably the one downside. Now, he came in with the reputation of being an excellent defensive player, even somebody who can play center field in the big leagues. And I'll tell you, when I saw him last spring, the first time I really got to watch him play, I thought to myself, okay, yeah, he moves a lot better than you think for somebody that size. And then he got to the big leagues last summer, and they put him in left field because of who else they already had. And the position was new to him, and he looked pretty uncomfortable at times doing that. But you thought, okay, give him some time, he'll get comfortable with it. He'll start to understand it. We haven't really seen a whole lot of improvement there from him. And I don't know if it's just a case of he's not as good defensively as we thought, or he is still learning that position on the fly. It's hard to say, but I thought it was notable the other night, Davey pulled him in the ninth inning for defense. He's also used him as DH now a couple of times when Nathaniel Lowe was out. And so it does make you wonder if they're already a little concerned that defense is not going to be his forte. It doesn't mean he can't still be a great player, of course. Mm-hmm. But to be the full, complete player that everybody kind of projected for him, he definitely has work to do in the outfield if he's going to, you know, realize that part of his potential.
I feel so old, I guess, but I still think it's weird when you talk about the DH and the NL, but whatever.
No, me too. I don't like it, but it's here to stay.
Yeah, it ain't going anywhere. All right, so we've had this awesome beginning of the season for James Wood, and he looks, I mean, we got plenty of time till the All-Star break, but like he looks like he'll certainly be the Nats All-Star. I do want to flip this thing. We are talking with our friend Mark Zuckerman here on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude makes the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. You can follow Mark at Mark Zuckerman, Z-U-C-K-E-R-M-A-N. He is not the dude from Facebook. Zuck, Dylan Cruz, dude. Now, it's still super early. They're, what, 16 games in, 10% of the season in? But it's not great.
It's not great so far. You're right. And, you know, this is why, as we're talking about James Wood, like you appreciate what he's doing and a guy realizing his potential right off the bat. And in Cruz's case, it just hasn't happened yet. Doesn't mean it won't, of course. He's supremely talented. This wasn't a case of the Nationals like reaching for someone at the number two spot in the draft. A couple of years ago, everybody in the world said he was that good. And most people believed he was worthy of being a number one pick, if not for his LSU teammate, Paul Skeens, who, by the way, he's going to face tonight here in Pittsburgh. The one thing I'll say is he's hitting the ball hard and doesn't have a lot to show for it. So there has been some bad luck there. That first week of the year, he was swinging everything, striking out a lot. Since then, much more contact, including some hard contact. And for whatever reason, he's hit it, you know, right at the shortstop, right at the center fielder, stuff like that. So when you see that, you do say, okay, give it some time. This should start to turn. The luck should turn in his direction here eventually. Hopefully he has the right attitude about it and doesn't get down on himself. I mean, this is somebody who has succeeded at every level he's ever played.
Right.
I'm not sure he's ever had to go through something quite like this. And to be doing it at the big league level is a whole other story. So you've seen Davey give him some days off, some mental breaks.
Yeah.
You've seen him bat pretty much at the bottom of the lineup, trying to take all the pressure off of him. He's going to be under the spotlight tonight, assuming he's playing, because he is facing his old buddy Skeens, and I'll be interested to see how that goes. But they're not giving up on him. They're going to give him 600 at-bats no matter what, mm-hmm. and it's just up to him to like let those talents and really the work ethic and drive that he has just take over at some point. I think most people agree that it will happen eventually, but it's a reminder that what Wood is doing and what Soto and Harper did back in the day, like, that's not the norm. It does right. usually take some time,
right.
and it doesn't have to happen right away. It doesn't mean that it won't happen if it doesn't happen right away.
Yeah, just I think a lot of fans, they see those guys come in, and they just expected it to happen for Cruz. But you're right. He take a little time, he'll be all right. Well, I look at what he was and what he is now. It's not good, but it's jumped up from where he was.
And he's still a really good defender, too.
Yes, and the most encouraging thing there, he's not taking it into the field with him. He's still making some excellent plays in right field and center field at times as well. That's a good sign. If somebody has the ability to compartmentalize the two parts of the game, that tells you a lot about his maturity and just his work ethic and everything else.
You know, one guy that's having a great start beyond Wood is a catcher, Ruiz. I mean, he's hitting everything. How encouraging has his start been, Zuck?
Hugely encouraging. And honestly, if you took everybody from the team and said, who was most important to get off to a good start this year, I would have put Ruiz number one on that list. He had an awful 2024. He admitted it. He knew it, both offensively and defensively. He worked really hard this winter on different parts of his game. He lost some weight. He wanted to come in and flip that script and show everyone that, no, actually, I am that franchise catcher that you thought you were getting all along, that you actually gave the long-term contract to. And so far, it's everything you could have asked for. It's not just at the plate. Behind the plate has been really good as well, throwing out runners, calling good games. And the consistency at the plate has been excellent. And, I mean, the craziest stat to me, they've played 15 games and he started 14 of them as a catcher.
Wow.
That doesn't happen in the big league. Now, they have had some off days, and that's helped a little bit. But it's a combination of how well he's played and the shape he's in and the fact that he really wants to do this, and Davey's going to let him do that for a while until he starts to see some kind of physical deterioration. I haven't looked it up, but I don't think any other catcher has started 14 out of 15 games so far this year. Eventually, you are going to have to give him some days off. I imagine, you know, four-game series in Pittsburgh, three games in Colorado with no off days. We're going to see Riley Adams for a couple of games, I would think, this week. But as long as he's producing, it's kind of hard to take him out of the lineup.
Just those knees, man. Yeah, I feel like baseball kind of eases their way into the season with more off days than normal. This is the Nats' first week where they're playing every day. It'll be interesting. Watching Skeens tonight is going to be electric. I'm glad you mentioned that. I guess we won't know until much later in the season when Pittsburgh comes to town to see Skeens here. But that, I mean, seems like must-see TV. But, Zuck, I got to ask, man. I've tried to go positive, negative, positive, negative. What do you make of this bullpen?
It hasn't been good so far, guys. and I will say that I'm not alone in this regard, that coming into the season, that was my number one concern. I think a lot of people felt that way when you saw the moves they made over the winter or the lack of moves they made. About half of the bullpen was signed like from February 1st on, including bringing Kyle Finnegan back. Finnegan's been the best of them all, really the only truly reliable guy. And you're seeing a few veterans with some track records, Jorge Lopez, Lucas Sims, Colin Poche, not perform up to what they thought they were going to be. And then the younger guys, you're dealing with some injuries. Orlando Ribalta just got hurt. Derek Law was supposed to be a really important part of the bullpen and didn't make it to opening day. And he's still on the IL with just kind of waiting for his arm to get into shape, I guess, is the best way to put it. And we haven't seen him yet. That's been a little bit troubling. There's nothing harder in baseball than having a team that gets good starting pitching, that gets early runs, takes a lead late into a game, and then blows it late because of a bullpen. It's such a difficult thing psychologically to deal with. You know, it hasn't necessarily been they've blown games that they've led, but there have been close games that were there for the taking, and they just have not been able to keep it close, to give their lineup a chance. it's a problem. And I think at some point, if you're Davey Martinez, you do have to wonder. It's one thing to trust guys with track records, but eventually you may have to try some younger arms, see how they perform under the spotlight. And, you know, maybe when it's all said and done, those are your top relievers. And it's not the guys making more money with, you know, big league experience.
I wouldn't mind seeing less of Sims. That much I know. Really encouraging start for Mackenzie Gore, though. I mean, he has real strikeout stuff.
Yeah, yesterday wasn't as good against the Marlins, but big picture, it's been
overall
encouraging. Yeah, to see that, and again, somebody who you knew had it all, and it was just a matter of putting it all together and staying consistent with it. His opening day start against the Phillies was phenomenally good. And it also pitched well against, I think it was the Dodgers in the last homestand. This is a guy who has all the tools and, more importantly, the mindset to want to be the ace of the team. He's always kind of had that that drive in him, the desire to be the best. He hasn't backed down from anything. He knows when he's on, he's better than anybody he's facing at the plate. It's just a matter of consistency from start to start. And what he's done well, and a little bit yesterday, not as much, but what he's done well is not let things get out of control. When he starts getting guys on base in the past, you could see it falling apart on him. He's stayed much more composed, I think, so far this year, and not turning starts into blowups. And what he's been able to do is give them innings as a result and give them a chance to win. Out of everybody in the rotation's been fine so far, but he's the one that really stands out as having elevated his game and really looking like a number one starter.
As Doc Walker would say, he got that dog in him. Mark, we got to run, man.
Appreciate you,
thank
Mark.
Thank you for the time, brother. Seriously.
You got it. Thank you, guys.
All right, bro.
Mark Zuckerman, you can watch him on Masson. You can read his stuff on Masson.com. Does a great job covering the Nats. Knows that team inside and out. Coming up at noon, the update I don't think anybody really wants to hear.